Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Explanation of the Vedic Path, Text 43. Mam vidate, vidate, mam vikalpya poyate, twaham etavat sarva vedarta shabda astaya. Mam vida maya matra anudyante pratishidya prasidati Mam vidate vidate mam
Mam vidate vidate mam
Vikalpya poyate tvaham
Vikalpya poyate tvaham
Etavan sarva vedarta
Etavan sarva vedarta
Shabda astaya mam vida
Shabda astaya mam vida
Maya matra manudyante
Maya matra manudyante
Pratishidya prasidati
Pratishidya prasidati
Mam vidate vidate mam
Mam vidate vidate mam
Vikalpya poyate tvaham
Vikalpya poyate tvaham
Etavan sarva vedarta
Etavan sarva vedarta
Shabda astaya mam vida
Shabda astaya mam vida
Maya matra manudyante
Maya matra manudyante
Pratishidya prasidati
Pratishidya prasidati
Mam vidate vidate mam
Mam vidate vidate mam
Vikalpya poyate tvaham
Vikalpya poyate tvaham
Etavan sarva vedarta
Etavan sarva vedarta
Shabda astaya mam vida
Shabda astaya mam vida
Maya matra manudyante
Maya matra manudyante
Pratishidya prasidati
Pratishidya prasidati
Me Vidate enjoins in sacrifice.
Enjoins in sacrifice.
Abhidate
designates as the object of worship.
Me Vikalpya presented as alternate hypothesis. Apoyate am refuted to also aha I
etava thus
sarva veda
of all the Vedas
artha the meaning
Shabda,
the transcendental sound vibration. Astaya,
establishing.
Ma, me,
Abhidhamma.
Abhidhamma.
Material duality.
Maya
matra.
As simply illusion.
Anudya. Describing elaborately in different aspects.
Ante.
Ultimately.
Pratishitya.
Negating.
Prasidati.
Become satisfied. Translation. I am the ritualistic sacrifice enjoined by the Vedas, and I am the worshipable deity. It is I who am presented as various philosophical hypotheses, and it is I alone who am then refuted by philosophical analysis. The transcendental sound vibration thus establishes me as the essential meaning of all Vedic knowledge. The Vedas, elaborately analyzing all material duality as nothing but my illusory potency, ultimately completely negate this duality and achieve their own satisfaction. Purport. The Lord declared in the previous verse that He alone knows the ultimate purpose of the Vedas, and now the Lord reveals that He alone is the ultimate basis and purpose of all Vedic knowledge. The Karmakanda section of the Vedas prescribes ritualistic sacrifices for promotion to heaven. Such sacrifices are the Lord Himself. Similarly, the Upasana Kanda section of the Vedas designates different demigods as objects of ritualistic worship. And these deities are not different from the Lord Himself, being expansions of the Lord's body. In the Gyanakanda section of the Vedas, different philosophical methods of analysis are presented and refuted. Such knowledge, which analyzes the potency of the Supreme Lord, is not different from Him. Ultimately, Lord Krishna is everything, because everything is part and parcel of the Lord's multipotencies. Although Vedic literature entices those absorbed in material duality to begin the Vedic way of life by offering them materially desirable rewards, the Vedas eventually refute all material duality by bringing one to the stage of God consciousness, wherein there is nothing different from the Supreme Lord. Within the Vedic literature, there are various injunctions stating that at a particular stage of life, one should give up fruit of rituals and take to the path of knowledge. Similarly, other injunctions declare that a self-realized soul should give up the path of speculative knowledge and take directly to the shelter of the Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead. But nowhere is there an injunction recommending that one give up the loving service of the Lord, because that is the eternal constitutional position of every living entity. Different philosophical theses are presented and rejected in the Vedas, since one who is progressing must give up each stage in the advancement of knowledge. For example, one who is addicted to sex enjoyment is taught to accept religious marriage and enjoy sex pleasure with his wife. Such ritualistic knowledge is to be given up when one attains the stage of detachment, whereupon one is recommended to take the renounced order of life. In that stage of life, one is forbidden to see or speak with women. When, however, one reaches the perfection of Krishna consciousness, wherein the Lord is manifest everywhere, One may engage all living entities, including women, in the loving service of the Lord without danger of spiritual fall down. Thus, different injunctions based on progressive stages of spiritual vision are presented and refuted in Vedic literature. Since all such injunctions and processes are ultimately meant for the achievement of Krishna consciousness, the loving service of the Lord, they're not different from Lord Krishna himself. The conditioned soul, therefore, should not prematurely stop his progressive march back home, back to Godhead, by foolishly mistaking an intermediate or preliminary stage of advancement as the actual goal of life. One must understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the source, maintenance, and resting place of everything, and that every living entity is the Lord's eternal servitor. In this way, one should continue on the Vedic path all the way back home, back to Godhead, for eternal life of bliss and knowledge. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 11th canto, 21st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Krishna's Explanation of the Vedic Path. Mam vidate bidate mam vikalpya poyate tvaham etavan sarava vedarta shabda astaya mam bidam maya matra manudyante pratishidya prasidati. I am the ritualistic sacrifice enjoined by the Vedas, and I am the worshipable deity. It is I who am presented as various philosophical hypotheses, and it is I alone who am then refuted by philosophical analysis. The transcendental sound vibration thus establishes me as the essential meaning of all Vedic knowledge. The Vedas, elaborately analyzing all material duality as nothing but my illusory potency, ultimately completely negate this duality and achieve their own satisfaction. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschityadesh Karne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gauravakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
There's a description in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita and one or two other places in which Lord Krishna speaks, in principle at least, in these types of terms. I am this, I am that. All sorts of prominent manifestations, most of them within the material world, but also some of them completely spiritual. And there the explanation is that these particular things are not actually Krishna in person. Of course, some are, but on the whole, the great majority. You know, you have of wielders of weapons, I am Ram. Of course, that is really Parasaram, who is a Kshatriya Vaishyavatara. Anyway, shall we just say that most of them are not examples of Krishna himself appearing in a certain form. That they're rather displays of his energy. And in terms of Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference from the Lord, in that sense, those things as his energy and in that way an integral part of his existence, they can be considered types of forms of himself. In that sense, in that context, not absolutely, as in the case of the Lord's incarnations and like this, the deity form of the Lord, Krishna in the form of the holy name. These are actually he himself. But when Krishna says, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and moon, I am the gambling of cheats, amongst fish I am the shark, So, in these cases, then we should not take it that this is actually the form of the Lord, and such things like a cup of water could be put on the altar and worshipped as such. So it's an important point, because even though we may find it a little amusing in some cases, but the impersonalists and those who are influenced by impersonalism and who are therefore more or less impersonalists, they would take it like that. At least many of them would take it like that. All these things are worshipable because they're forms of Krishna, and therefore you can worship anything. Why bother going to the temple? So many Hindu people particularly, they have that sort of idea. Why bother coming to the temple? Because God is everywhere. So I can worship Him at home on my television set. Yes. And so on. That's the idea. So that is there, particularly in the 10th canto of Bhagavad Gita, and some other places also in Bhagavad Gita. And here and there in Shastra we find types of concepts presented, and here also. So the principle is essentially the same. Principle is essentially the same. Of course, there are actually parts of the Vedic literatures which are actually Krishna in person. Like Bhagavad Gita is a form of the Lord. And other parts are describing the Lord, and therefore they're forms of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita, of course, is spoken by the Lord. So in a direct sense, if we were to hear Krishna say, "I am Bhagavad Gita," it is more direct than "I'm the taste of water." Krishna is actually present there. And there's a story, Srila Prabhupada speaks in one class of his, and actually it's a well-known Vedic story, that one devotee, he read Bhagavad Gita every day, he liked Bhagavad Gita so much, but chapter 9, verse 22, he could not really accept, and actually thought it was a mistake. Tesham, what is it? Ananyas chintayantumam, yejana periopasite, tesham nityabhiyukdanam yogik shemam vahamyaham. To those who are always remembering my personal form and worshipping me like that, then I carry to them what they lack and I preserve what they have. So that devotee, he felt it couldn't be like that. He felt someone must have changed the text. Because Krishna is so important, why would he have to personally look after a devotee's possessions? Or why would he have to carry to the devotee and deliver to the devotee various things for the devotee to use in Krishna's service or like that? Why would he do that? He's God. So that devotee thought, this is a mistake, and rather it should be changed to reflect the idea that Krishna causes it to happen. That he could accept. Krishna's very merciful to the devotees, so surely Krishna causes so many things to happen in the life of the devotee by different means. He causes, not that he does those things, but he causes them to be done. So that devotee, the particular word that he was objecting to, the main one was vahami, which means I carry. So he cut it out of the book, in the place wrote karomi, which means I cause it to happen. Tesham nitya vyukdanam yogakshemam karomyaham. It rhymes. It works. Grammatically. So he thought, good, I have improved Bhagavad Gita, or, you know, he felt, I have corrected a mistake that someone put in there somehow. It's called, the process or practice is called interpolation. Interpolation. Interpolation means someone takes some text, some book, something written by some other person, and changes it, makes some alteration. Yeah. That's called interpolation. And in the Vedic literatures, there's a certain amount of that. In so many, they say in the Bible, and, you know, it's very, very likely that it's true, and who knows where else. For example, in, what is it? Is it Bhavishya Purana? I think it's Bhavishya Purana. There's different versions available. One version mentions Muhammad, which is hardly possible because he definitely appeared later. And even one version, would you believe, refers to Queen Victoria of England. You know, if you think Muhammad's a bit far out to make an appearance in Puranic Vedic literature, Queen Victoria, whew, that's just pretty clear cut. So anyway, I am Queen Victoria. No, I am Muhammad. So interpolation occurs and has occurred. So this complicates things, of course. But anyway, the particular point here is that this devotee, then, he thought it had been interpolated. And he felt, you know, after thinking about it and even agonizing about it over a considerable period of time, because he would read Bhagavad Gita every day, and he would come to this verse and it would be just like, you know, difficult for him, a little shocking what to do. He decided that, you know, as far as I can see, this would be the best thing. So he changed it. Karomyaham. I cause it to happen. And then, to cut a long story short, Krishna, he went out begging food for lunch. Krishna and Balaram came disguised as little delivery boys carrying all sorts of food ingredients, and told his wife, who was at home, we met your husband in the market. He was trying to get food, and we said, here, no problem, we'll take it and deliver it to your home. And the wife was very surprised and said, please sit down, and when my husband comes back, in the meantime, I'll cook a big feast. We'll all have a big feast together. And the dark-skinned boy, one white-skinned boy, one black-skinned boy, the black-skinned boy, he said, no, I'm not staying. When I made this offer to your husband, I told him, we'll carry it to your house. He hit me on the back and cut my back, and he showed his back. There were cuts there. Your husband did this. And so the two boys went. And the devotee came back, and there's his wife cooking a big feast already. He couldn't understand what happened. And she said, it was those boys. The black-skinned boy, the white-skinned boy, you know. And he said, which white-skinned boy, black-skinned boy? Who are you talking about? I didn't meet any people like that. And she said, oh, you know. And the black-skinned boy was offering to bring it here, but you hit him on the back and cut his back. But he still brought it. So Prabhupada tells this story. But it's a well-known story, actually. And then that devotee understood. This Bhagavad Gita is actually Krishna. Because he had, you know, he didn't like use a rubber or Tippex or something. He actually physically cut the word out of a piece of bark. It was written on tree bark. He cut the word out with some knife or some sort of blade. In this way he had cut the body of the Lord. And the Lord appeared and showed that. But at the same time showed that he actually carries and delivers personally. So therefore we can understand that Bhagavad Gita, or at least certain parts of the Vedic literatures, which are very specifically Krishna conscious, they are actually forms of the Lord in person. And they're not just displays of his energy. And, you know, in some sort of bade, abade sense, one can consider them to be not different from him. They're actually him. But of course, not all the Vedas. Because some of the Vedas talk about worshipping other deities and doing other processes. Some talk about impersonalism and apparently deny personalism. So, you know, so very specifically, those parts which directly present the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are forms of himself. However, in that more achincha bedabed sense, the Lord is telling Uddhava here that even the parts of the Vedic literatures which present apparently other goals, still, of course he's speaking in terms of the sound vibration, still, it can be considered a form of me. The point is, and it is mentioned actually in the purport, is that the Vedic literatures are presented by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to Lord Brahma and then distributed through the universe. And the Vedic literatures, they are, well, Krishna says, Vedaischa sarvair aham eva vedya. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. So you might say, well, you know, the parts which present Durga or something like that, some material goal, as being the goal, that how can you say by all the Vedas I am to be known if you've got clear statements like this in some parts? The thing is, all those other processes, like here Karma Kanda is mentioned, ritualistic sacrifices of different demigods, generally Agni, Indra, they are generally the most popular. And then Shiva to some degree, Durga to some degree. And then the Upasana Kanda. Upasana Kanda is the section of the Vedic literatures dealing with worship of different deities as distinct from sacrifice, like fire sacrifice. So somewhat different process. Although generally for approaching the same deities, means the demigods. Actually, technically, the parts of the Vedic literatures which deal with worship of Krishna can also be considered to be Upasana Kanda or Vishnu Upasana Kanda. But But in this context, the way it's being presented here, it's referring to worship of different demigods for achieving different material ends, as distinct from just performing fire sacrifices in order to please the same deities. So the point is that all these different processes presented, Karmakanda, Upasana Kanda, then Jnana Kanda is presented. Jnana Kanda is particularly the Upanishads. They are presenting, well, different things actually, but more often than not, they're presenting a somewhat impersonal picture of what is the absolute truth in many cases. So the thing is, all these different processes, be it ritualistic type of sacrifice, be it some sort of temple worship of a particular deity, particularly demigod, be it cultivation of some impersonal knowledge, they're all meant to be steps towards becoming Krishna conscious. Just as when you start school, then you begin in the first class, ABC, 1, 2, 3. This is all, you know, high tech for you in the beginning stages. But the next year you move on to the second class, and then third class, and so on. And after some time, there's no more ABC. As such, of course, you're using the language, but not in the sense of ABC and so much learning how to spell and things like that. Because you've moved on, you've progressed, and your mathematics goes on from just 1, 2, 3 into more complex algebra and things, trigonometry and whatnot. So, but that doesn't mean that your ABC 1, 2, 3 in class number 1 was wrong. No, it was right in terms of the level you were on at that time. But then you progress until finally you get matric, then you go to university, and so on and so forth. So you progress. The Vedic literatures are structured in the same way. The idea, what is meant to happen, how it is meant to be seen and dealt with, and how one is meant to apply all these things, is in principle exactly the same. You begin on a low level, and once you've got that, then you go on to the next level. Once you've got that, you go on to another level. And once you come to Karma Yoga, as we see in Bhagavad Gita, then eventually you go beyond that to the point of devotional service. Even though there are similarities between the two. In Karma Yoga, you're doing your normal duty for the pleasure of the Lord. And in Bhakti Yoga, you're also doing duties for the pleasure of the Lord. Of course, there are some differences. In Karma Yoga, you must only do your prescribed duty in terms of Varnashram. In Bhakti Yoga, of course, that may be there to some degree, but then, particularly as the devotee progresses, then the devotee comes to the point where he or she can engage in services if Krishna wants, if the spiritual master wants, which are not necessarily in keeping with your duties as they would be understood simply in terms of Varnashram. And an example given in the purport is that, according to Varnashram, a sannyasi should not deal with women. But then in the purport it went on to say that, according to Krishna consciousness, one within the strict parameters of Krishna consciousness, one may deal with so many things, with women, with money. Prabhupada said about money that as a sannyasi, he would not normally really deal with money. Or, for example, Prabhupada performed wedding ceremonies. So, certain things like this, according to the strict Varnashram karma yoga type concept of what a sannyasi can and can't do, when the person becomes a devotee and becomes a little more advanced in Krishna consciousness, then in terms of time, place and circumstance, they may do like that. Yes. So, but that doesn't mean, first of all, it doesn't mean that the demigod worship of the person in the very beginning stages is wrong. And it doesn't mean that for the sannyasi who's not really a devotee, but more in terms of karma yoga and more material sannyas, that his very strict external renunciation is wrong. It's right for him. For him. And it's right means it's right for anybody who's on that type of level. So this is the point here. This is the point here. That in that context, all the Vedic literatures can be considered to be forms of Krishna, and they're all very specifically at least leading a person in the direction of Krishna or leading a person to Krishna. Although they don't go so far in and of themselves. I mean, each particular part of the Vedas doesn't go so far. But it leads you to the next step and the next step. And then in this way a person becomes Krishna conscious. So when I first read the verse and I read that Krishna says, I am presented as various philosophical hypotheses, and it is I alone who am then refuted by philosophical analysis. I thought, what's this? But as explained in the purport, the hypotheses are like, for example, philosophical hypothesis that a sannyasi should live in a certain way, in this very, very sort of more rigid way. So that is established with reason and argument. Why? Philosophically explain why. And for a person on that level, they'll see, yes, these are good reasons why I, at this stage in my development, why I should do, accept sannyas, and practice it in this particular way. But then comes along Krishna consciousness and Sarva Dharman Parichaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, the idea of putting aside other dharmas and simply doing what is favorable for Krishna in devotional service. And not that it means that a person just happily just does anything, but if the circumstances are such, then he may act in a way which is opposed or not recommended for someone who's more on the material level. So this is the idea. Krishna is there. The Vedic literatures are really there to understand Krishna. Not that you stop, like in school, not that you stop at the end of class one, A, B, C, D, E, F, you know, all the way through, I've got it. That's it. 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, some addition, multiplication, division. Now I've got it. Now, okay, I can graduate. No, you have to go on. Similarly with the Vedas, people should not stop at a certain point worshipping Durga. We stop there. We worship Durga and we just, that's it. That's our program permanently. If things are presented properly, then one will understand after worshipping Durga, next is some higher level, whatever it may be. And after understanding Brahman, the impersonal spiritual manifestation, then comes Paramatma, so then one can move on to that and not get stuck there. And then one becomes identified just in terms of that level you're stuck on. You're a Brahmavadi. You're a Durga worshipper. You're a this, you're a that. One should really go on to full Krishna consciousness and not get stuck, because if you do get stuck, then it becomes material. Then it becomes Maya, and you get stuck in the material world. So this is Krishna's great gift. The Vedic literature is one of many, but a very important one, of Krishna's great gifts to humanity. And for us as devotees, we should understand it's our duty to help other people get that great gift. At any time, 365 days in the year, but particularly during the Christmas marathon. It started, has it?
Yeah.
Oh yes. So please do your best. Distribute as many books as possible to as many people as possible. In this way, give them Krishna and give them Krishna consciousness. Hundreds of books a day. As we used to say in England, in book distribution, 100 a day keeps Maya away. And 500 a day, wow, keeps Maya completely out of the picture altogether. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Yes.
All the different incarnations of Krishna, they seem to have different potencies, but if Krishna is absolute, why would they be like this one? I don't have to say that we use the word lesser, but...
Because they're different forms of the Lord in terms of his different moods, and the different forms have, well, in some cases, all the potencies fully. In some cases, all the potencies less. In some cases, some or even one potency fully or to some degree. And so you get all these different forms of the Lord, in which, of course, they're all forms of Him. But He's only manifesting Himself in certain respects in terms of the particular forms. Ete chansa kala pumsa. There are many forms of the Lord. Some are complete, some are parts of parts. But Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the complete original form. So Nrisingadeva is particularly Krishna's anger when his devotees are offended, particularly. And to a much lesser degree, other features of Krishna's character are displayed. Like Lord Ram. he displays not just one, but a number of qualities of the Lord. But definitely some not, like Krishna dancing with the gopis. Ram's mood was very different. He didn't manifest that type of pastime. He didn't manifest that type of consciousness. Didn't manifest it. He manifested that very staunch faithfulness, Eka Patni Vrata. Okay?
About Sarvasya Chayam Radhi Sunni Vishto, and seated in everyone's heart, in the Mayavari, in the Vasanas, and in the all living entities.
And fulfilling their desires. Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yovadadati Kama. Krishna's there in every living entity, and he's been fulfilling their desires since time immemorial, and seeing they get the reactions for their desires, or having their desires put into effect. Yes, as the devotee surrenders, Krishna reciprocates accordingly. Or as the person approaches him, includes the non-devotees.
Yeah.
They're approaching him in another way.
The Prabhupada says that everyone is looking for God.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah. And Prabhupada, I read, I mentioned from time to time, there's a purport in third or fourth canto, I forget exactly. Prabhupada says the atheist is desiring how to explain there's no God. He's got this feeling, of course there's no God. How to express it, how to explain it. Krishna gives him the intelligence. And he presents it very cleverly. And he thinks, I've proved it. And many other people think, yes, just see, he proved it. He didn't really. But Krishna gave him the intelligence to do it, present the idea, and very cleverly. And so he and other people who are not really that intelligent, they become convinced, and then they leave it at that. Okay, got it. That's the end. Now we understand reality.
Prabhu was saying everybody's looking for Krishna.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago I was in the CNA. I was going to give the whole story. And I met one man there and he told me I'm writing a book of philosophy. I said, oh, that's interesting. Come outside, I want to show you something. It's about philosophy. I said, I can't show you the side that you want. So he came out. So I introduced myself. I gave him the Bhagavad Gita and he took the Bhagavad Gita and he said, wow! I've been looking for this book.
Good.
You see, people, it's happened to me many times before. People, like a man used to say to the conference, I gave him a higher place, and he said to me, jeez, I had this book so many years ago, and I always wanted to give it to one of my friends, and now you got it. And he kept on saying to me over and over, I said, okay, it's right. And he put his arms around me and said, thank you so much. He shook my hand at him. Thank you. I said, okay, thank you so much.
Of course, as Jai Satchinanda Prabhu said, everyone's looking for Krishna. But some don't know they are, and they think they find someone else who sort of reminds them to some degree, or appears like, put it this way. People are looking for the ideal partner, companion, which is Krishna, can only be Krishna. Then they find someone else who's, not apparently a bad companion, but they think, found. But, the soulmate. But But actually they were looking for Krishna because Krishna is the only one who can really be like that.
Yes.
So.
Because the day before, I met an African man who took a book from me. And he said he used to go to the temple in Cape Town. He said, oh, he started eating meat again. He stopped chanting. So I gave him a book and I was preaching to him. And he said, no, he understands it. And he took a book. And then I saw him yesterday. I saw him again. And he said, come here, I want to talk to you. And I said, oh, really? He said, yeah, you know, yesterday I saw you. I've been thinking what you were talking about. And I must really pull myself towards myself. And he took another book again.
Good.
So we're meeting people there that... so many people there looking. I don't know if you say looking, but people, something's there.
Well, they're definitely looking for something. They don't know it's Krishna in many cases.
Well, many years ago, I was happened to be in a temple, and there was a very wealthy woman, full of jewelry. Like Africana, I'm trying to teach you. Then the deities opened and she saw the deities and she just started to cry. She said, I can't understand what's happening to me.
I see.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai. Jai, jai.